This is Good News Chats with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen, and this Good News Chat is with Bill Bays. Hey, Bill, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. How are you doing today?
I'm fine.
Good.
So, did you grow up in a Christian family?
I did. Actually, when I was about 6 years old, my dad was saved, actually, while he was in the Navy back in the early 1940s when he was in the Navy stationed up in Maine. And he went to a church there and was saved and came back in a year or so and felt called to the ministry. So I was saved under his ministry when I was 9 years old.
And you've been a Christian ever since?
Yes, I have. I sure have.
For about as much time as you've been a Christian, you've been singing, haven't you?
Almost. Well, back then, I sang in church for my dad. Actually, first time I started singing in church was when my dad was in Bible college. I wasn't big enough that they could see me behind the pulpit, so I had to stand on a chair and sing for his chapel services. He went to a real small Bible college in eastern Kentucky. So they had to stand me on a chair, and I stand up there and sing, and I had a real, real high voice. I sing first tenor now. Back then, I could sing with the sopranos when I was a little boy. So I sang for the chapel services for the Bible college.
And how did you get from there to singing gospel music professionally?
Well, it was a long route. I did that, and then my dad actually, when he finished Bible college, he started a church in Princeton, Indiana. It was with the Assemblies of God. And he started a church there in 1950. Today, by the way, it's the biggest church in the city, which is wonderful to know. But when my dad was there, he was only there like 2 years in the beginning. And then he felt like he should leave and wait on the call to another church. And in the interim, he was working in a factory, and a big piece of steel fell on him and crushed him to death. And I was 12 years old at the time. So from that, my mother and sister and myself, we moved back from the Princeton-Fort Branch, Indiana area, back to Evansville, where we had come from, and where I was born. But we moved back there, and then when I was 14, the pastor's son and myself and a couple other guys decided we wanted to do a quartet because we heard some gospel quartets, and we thought we could do that. I was 14, and the pastor's son was 15, and the baritone singer was 16, and we had a guy that went to church that was 27 that sang bass, and so we had us a quartet, and that's where I started when I was 14 years old. We actually started out, I played the guitar, and we started the first couple of times we sang. I played the guitar a little bit with us singing, and I didn't like playing and singing, so we got us a piano player. We found a piano player that came to church, and we did that. But the first time, I don't remember exactly what song we sang, the very first one, but we did have an interesting thing. All of us were at an age where our feet were growing faster than the rest of us. You know how boys get when they're about 14, 15 years old, their feet grow faster than their height does. And all of us had, at 14 years of age, we had over a size 10 shoe. So our pastor, we were singing, first couple times we sang, they didn't know what to call us. So about the third time we sang, he got up and he announced that we were going to sing in the church. Now, we had a big church. We had run over 1,000 people in the church. And he announced that we were going to sing. And he said, I've thought up a name for these boys. And this was in the Sunday evening service. And he said, I thought up a name for these boys. And he said, I looked down the other day when they were singing up here. And he said, they all got big feet, so I'm going to call them the Big-Footed Four. That's what he called us to start with. And then we finally, he had a regular radio program that was on every Sunday morning from 8:30 till 9. And we became his singers on his program. He finally named us after his program, which was Echoes of Calvary. Uh-huh. So we named our Quartet, the Echoes of Calvary Quartet, because we did that radio program with him.
How long were you with the group?
I was with them from then until I was 18 years old, and then I went in the Navy for 5 years, came back out of the Navy after those 5 years, and then the next 2 years, the same group got back together, and we called ourselves the Trailsmen Quartet. We changed the name because the radio program was no longer in existence. And then that went up into the early 1960s, and the Oak Ridge Boys used to come through and sing in our church, and we would sing before they did. And Smitty Gatlin from the Oak Ridge Boys liked my singing, and he was ready to resign from the Oak Ridge Boys and move out to Fort Worth, Texas, and take a music minister's job at First Baptist Church. And so he called me and asked me if I wanted to move out to Fort Worth and sing in a trio with him. And he had a young man from North Carolina to play the piano and sing the baritone, and I sang the tenor, and Smitty sang the lead. So that's where I really got into what you call a professional business, because we went out and did concerts and were paid for the concerts. So that was in 1965, late 1965 and 66, I think.
What were you called?
Just the Smitty Gatlin Trio is what it was. From there, I think it was early 1967, I was contacted by a fellow named Hal Kennedy, who actually was a guitar player for the Dixie Echoes Quartet, and they were on television every week. I was contacted by him he wanted to start a trio. And so I moved from Fort Worth to Nashville, where I live now, and sang with his trio. And it was strange because we started like in December, and he was originally from Florida, and he had moved his wife up here. And in January, it was the worst winter that Nashville's ever had that I know of. And it snowed and snowed and snowed. And his wife got upset with the snow, so she told him, said, we're going back to Florida. so he broke the trio up and went back to Florida. And so I was just here. And I decided I was going to go to college and get my college degree, because I never had done that. And at the time, I was 28 years old. And I had been in the Navy for 5 years, so I went to college on my GI Bill. I got my degree in 3 years. I went straight through winter and summer.
What'd you get your degree in?
Elementary education. Mm-hmm. And I have a minor in Bible and a minor in vocal music technique. And so I majored in my minors. I ended up preaching and singing is what I ended up doing. I never have done much school teaching. I did a little bit of it. Then in 1971, when I was about ready to graduate, I had the Singing Rambos. Jack, have you heard of them?
Oh, yes.
Buck Rambo had become very sick. And Dottie was staying at home with him, and they needed someone to fill in with their group. It was Reba and Kenny Parker playing the piano, and Kenny sang the baritone. And so I went along with them and sang the lead so Reba could sing the high part. For about 2 weeks, I did that. This was during the time I was going to college. I took weekends and went with them. And while I was doing that, J.D. Sumner was at the big singing where we were singing up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which has about 20,000 people come to it every year. And I got up and sang there with the Rambos, and J.D. heard me sing. So he sent word by somebody to Kenny Parker, and then Kenny Parker from the Rambos contacted me, and he told me, he said, J.D. wants to talk to you. He would like to hire you to sing with the Stamps. And so I went and talked with him, and I ended up there in early 1971. That's how I got the job with the Stamps. And then after we recorded two albums, J.D., years before that, was with the Blackwood Brothers, and they were in Memphis, of course, and Elvis was a big gospel quartet fan. So he lived in Memphis, and when he was just a kid, he didn't have any money to get in the front door of the concerts, and he loved quartets, so he used to go to the back door of the concerts, and J.D. would let him in for free backstage so he could see the quartet sing. So they became friends, and so In 1971, the Imperials Quartet, who were working with Elvis, decided to take a job with Jimmy Dean and be his background vocalist, and to leave Elvis. So Elvis called J.D., and he said, do you have a group, or do you know a group or anything that could come and do my backgrounds? And, you know, you've been my friend a lot of years and all that kind of stuff. So J.D. said, well, let me send you a record of my group. So he sent Elvis one of our latest records, and Elvis called him as soon as he heard it. He said, would your group want to do my backgrounds? J.D. said, sure. So that's how we ended up with Elvis. In November of 1971, we did our first show with Elvis at Minneapolis, Minnesota. Between early 1971 and that time, Donnie Sumner, Richard Sturban, Ed Enoch, and myself, we spent hours upon hours upon hours in our bus while we were traveling, sitting in the back room of the bus, working on Elvis's songs. When we got there in November, we knew all of his songs and all the background vocals, and we just jumped right in there and did it. He liked it, and the rest is history.
Do you have a favorite Elvis story?
I have several of those. One evening, it was kind of normal for us to go to Elvis's suite of rooms after each concert when we worked in Las Vegas at the Hilton Hotel. Of course, being a Christian, I don't drink, and I didn't then, and I just don't, you know. It's part of what I feel like I shouldn't do as a Christian. Some Christians believe they can, and that's fine. That's up to them. That's between them and God. But with me, I don't feel like I should. So that's a preface to the story. We were in his suite one evening after the show, and he had several movie stars sitting around and talking. Everybody would just kind of move around and talk to each other and so forth. You know how those gatherings are. And he came over. I had a glass of orange juice, which I always drank. Just a glass of orange juice because I liked orange juice. It's good for you. And so I had a glass of orange juice, and Elvis came over. He said, let me taste your drink. And I said, okay, taste it. And he tasted it, and he put it down, and he said, that's what I thought. He said, you don't drink, do you? And I said, no, sir, I don't. And he said, well, I didn't think you did, like that. And he knew, you know, that he knew my Christian testimony because I lived it, and he knew that. So that was one story about that.
Was it hard to be a Christian in that environment?
I think it is difficult for a lot of people. I think there are many opportunities for compromise. And for me, I had to just do what I knew I had to do, you know. And so there was I was there about 5.5 years, and just the few months before I left, before I resigned, I really felt like God wanted me to leave there and go into the ministry. You know, I've really felt the call of God on my life. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of speaks volumes about what being a Christian is. And in that situation, you do what you're supposed to do while you're there as far as your work, and then you live your life in another manner. But nobody ever, you know, I never had anybody tease me or anybody do anything like that about my being a Christian. I was a gospel singer, you know. And when we weren't backing Elvis, well, we went and sang in churches and concerts and so forth. Mm-hmm.
But even in that environment, just because you sing gospel doesn't make you a Christian, does it?
Not necessarily, but you have to be a Christian. You know, if you're a Christian, you have to be one. If you claim to be one, you need to be one. That's what I'm saying. Just singing the gospel music doesn't make you a Christian, no.
So wherever you are, it's your responsibility to live your Christian life.
Yes, I think so. Very, very sincerely think so. Nowadays, I go quite often. I go overseas and sing for Elvis fan clubs, and I don't sing anything but gospel music, and my wife always goes with me, and I live my life in front of those people And when I communicate with them on email and everything, I always sign off, God bless you. And I always say something about the Lord. And I pray for them when I know they need prayer. And I tell them I'm praying for them and those kind of things. And if one of them gets ill and they say, well, we're ill, I say, well, I'll pray for you. And I do that. And I communicate with them by email and find out how they're doing.
Was there a godly person who greatly impacted your life?
I think there were two, really. My dad, I feel like he gave his life into ministry because he was trying to start a small church and had dedicated his life to the ministry. And he died in an accident in a factory. And he was working in the factory trying to make enough money to pay rent on a building where he was starting the church because we had absolutely no help. He impacted my life a lot. And then his pastor, which later became my pastor as I grew up, whose son was the one that I started the quartet with, I think he really influenced my life a huge amount. After my dad died, I was only 12 years old, and I needed some guidance. And my pastor, through his son, I think really gave me a lot of guidance. What he did in front of me was live his life in such a way that just awes you. He was the kind of guy that went to his church early in the morning, every day, and he had an office upstairs up to the right of the pulpit. The church was built where there was two little rooms up on either side of the pulpit, or the platform, and there was a balcony in the church, and up on that balcony on one end of it, he had an office up there. And it didn't matter how early you'd get up and come down there, he was down there praying. And he was one of the most praying men that I ever met. And he would be in that office every day from about 6 o'clock in the morning till about 11 o'clock before he ever came out. And then his son and I would go to lunch with him a lot of days when we were out of school and so forth. We would hang around the church. That's what I did when I was a church rat. You know, some people are gym rats. I was a church rat. I hung around the church a lot whenever I was a teenager. And my pastor there really influenced my life a lot.
We'll have more with Bill Bays right after these announcements. Today's good news announcement is from Romans 12. Let God remold your minds from within so that you may prove in practice that the plan of God for you is good, meets all his demands, and moves toward the goal of true maturity.
That's the end of our announcements.
That's the end of our announcements.
That's the end of our announcements.
That's the end.
That's the end.
That's the end.
That's the end.
No more.
So, Bill, when do you feel closest to God?
That's a really great question. There are a number of occasions that I feel close to God. I think I feel closest to God when, I'm an ordained minister now, and I've preached for about 30 years. And I preached yesterday morning in a church in Kentucky. And I feel closest to God when I am immersed in the Word and immersed in, preparation for preaching. I guess that'd probably be because it's just it's a process where you have to kind of immerse yourself into it, and it's in his presence because you can't do it without prayer, you know, and you cannot do it without some intense study and all those things. You get, when you get all of that in you, it's like getting, like asking a person when they feel fullest. That's after they've eaten a big steak, you know. And so this is when you've been in there eating on the big steak. Well, you know, the Word of God and the presence of God and everything, I think it's when I feel closest.
Have you ever experienced a miracle or seen an angel?
I haven't seen an angel, but I did experience a tremendous miracle in my life. I was traveling singing by myself and singing and preaching by myself back in the mid-1980s. I went up to Brooklyn, New York to sing at a big church up there, and I got in my van that I was traveling in when I finished that night and drove all the way back to Nashville. was over 20-something hours. I drove straight. And I'd been away from home for about a week, and I wanted to get back home. When I got home, I went to bed and went to sleep for close to a day. And when I got up, I couldn't hardly walk, couldn't hardly move. I just thought it would all limber up, but it never did change. So it went on for about a week like that. I'd go to bed and I could move a little bit when I was, before I went to bed. But when I got up in the morning, I just couldn't hardly move. So I went to an arthritis specialist, and he told me, you have acute, severe onset of arthritis. And I think, personally, probably it was a result from the abuse I'd put my body through on that trip. Well, it tarried and it carried on for a month or so, and he had me taking, I think I was taking something like 9 aspirins a day, something like that, mm-hmm. which would tear your stomach up. But he had me taking all those aspirins just so I could function and be able to move around. So I was taking the aspirins, and I was still going out and ministering, and this went on for about 2.5-3 months, something like that. And I went to North Little Rock, Arkansas, to an Assembly of God church over there, First Assembly of God. And I went over there on Saturday night. The pastor had gotten a room for, at this time, my wife and daughter were traveling with me. And we went to our room, and I felt really horrible. And so I laid down to rest and told my wife, I think my wife and daughter took a little swim in the pool or something like that. They came back in after a while, and I went to sleep, and I had felt so bad. And I got up, woke up the next morning, and I'd been praying. Every day I prayed and prayed for healing. And I woke up the next morning, and this make me cry, this spell, when I tell you. But at that point, when I got up, I stood up beside my bed. I didn't feel any pain.
Hmm.
And I had been praying the night before, of course. I just prayed a lot about it. I didn't feel any pain. I stood there beside the bed, and I looked at my wife, and her name is Dorcas. And I said, Dorcas, I said, I don't feel any pain. And I started jumping up and down, and I couldn't feel any pain. And I didn't have any pain in my back. I didn't have any in my legs or my hands or joints anywhere where I'd had it before. I just didn't have any at all. And I know that God gave me a miracle there. And I went to church that morning. And, of course, it was Assembly of God Church, which I'm ordained with the Assemblies of God. And we believe in miracles, and we believe in exciting things happening to you. Sometimes we get a little bit demonstrative in our church services. So I went there and I testified that morning. I sang and I testified instead of preaching. I testified about what had happened to me. And the place just went up. I mean, it just, that there was so much, the Spirit of God was so heavy in the place. The pastor and his wife got up, and they started a Jericho march, and the whole church got in a Jericho march going around the church shouting because of what God had done for me. That's my most exciting experience, I think.
For those who don't know what a Jericho march is, could you describe it?
Oh, it's where someone starts out. It's kind of like the bunny hop. only it's not the bunny hop. It's a spiritual march. You don't do the bunny hop. Someone starts out, and everybody in the church just falls in line behind them. They don't put their hands on their hips or anything like you do with the bunny hop, but they just stand and
sort of like a parade.
Just line up behind them, and they march around the in inside of the church, around mm-hmm. the outside of the pews.
So go down one aisle and up the other.
Yeah. And it's just, and all the time they're usually praising the Lord sometimes shouting and, just different demonstrative ways of letting God know how much they appreciate what he's done.
What size church do you attend?
It's not a very large church. We have less than 100 people. It's one of the Assembly of God churches here. It's close to me. It's the closest church to me.
Mm-hmm. How did you pick it?
Because it's close to where I live.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I can worship God anywhere I go. whether it's a big church or a little church or whoever the pastor is or whatever. But the pastor here is a very fine man. His name's Steve Allen, and the church is called Oak Hill Assembly of God. That's where I go to church. Mainly, I don't go, hadn't gone to other churches because I'm ordained with the Assemblies of God, and that's where I feel like I should go. I don't feel like we're the only churches going to heaven. You know, I have preached and sung in the Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, Catholic. I've sung in all those churches and preached in most of them. I never have preached in a Catholic church, mm-hmm. but I've preached in all the other ones, and a lot of independent charismatic churches.
So what drives you crazy about Christians?
I don't know. It doesn't drive me crazy, but I would like to see people be able to embrace the victory in the Lord more than we embrace the defeat of the devil. We seem to, a lot of churches seem to have, they're geared towards saying, oh, you know, the devil has done this to me, and the world has done this to me, and all this, you know, but God is good, and he's given me the victory, but they don't embrace the victory. Because next week they got another story in the same way.
Got to do it again, huh?
Yeah, and it's a fight with the devil all the time.
Yeah.
And the thing is you know, the Bible in Psalm 118:6 says, the Lord is on my side, I will not fear, what can man do unto me? That's one of David's sayings, and he said it in several different places. That just happens to be my favorite one. And that's my favorite passage of Scripture. And I would like to see everybody in the church sense that victory, because the Lord has already paid the price for the victory. You know, he paid the price for the victory. And for me to go around and talking about how bad the devil is and what he's doing to me is self-defeating, because I should be able to live in the victory, because I'm a child of the King.
What can you do now that you couldn't do as a child?
There's a lot of things. I was very restricted when I was a child. My dad was a pastor, and you know, for a short period of time, but he was a very strict guy. And I don't know how you want to approach that question. I can do anything that I want to do now, you know, but it's a matter of what I want to do. And what I want to do is the things that the Lord wants me to do.
Well, when I was growing up, I grew up in an Assemblies of God church. My dad was pastor. My grandfather was a pastor. So I've been churched for, you know, many years.
Uh-huh.
But what we were not allowed to go to movies. There's some question whether you could watch television. You couldn't go bowling. There are a lot of don'ts in the list.
Well, I can tell you a story about that. One of the worst spankings I got when I was a little kid, when my dad was pastoring this new church that he started in Princeton, Indiana, they had every Saturday evening, they had a movie in the park. And it was free, and you could go over there and watch it. And then it started at sundown. So a buddy that I was playing with, a guy that I was playing with, we were over in the park playing, because they'd had kind of a horse show that day, and we'd like to go to the horse shows. And I'd been over there, and we stayed over there. They started the movie after the horse show. And my dad at the time preached against going to movies. And so when I came home, I got in more trouble over going to that movie than I did anything else in my whole life. So I learned after, you know, some years, I guess you might say I could go to a movie now that I couldn't go back then, because our church was so dead set against anybody going to a movie. And the movies were very tame back then compared to what they are now. But my wife and I we watch the Hallmark Network most of the time and watch their movies, because most of them are fairly decent and clean, you know. You know, that's about the only thing that I do now that I didn't do back then.
Well, Bill wonders what I'm going to do next, what I'm going to ask next. It's time for the offering. Actually, it's just a chance for me to thank you for your generosity. People have donated their time and talent for this project, and so I'm taking this moment to say... Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I mean,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Bill, has God put a particular issue or cause on your heart?
I feel God has led me to try to help people embrace victory in their lives. And I'm not talking about all this stuff that's come out in the last several years, you know, about you got to just go around bubbly all the time. And you can't have any problems whatsoever. But I think God has planted a seed in my heart recently that I should minister to people about how to embrace victory and let victory flow in them like it can. You know, not let the defeatism of the devil get a grasp on them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like we should take it to extreme that I have heard 1970s and 80s. You know, some of what went on back then was some extreme and way out of kilter with what I think the word teaches us. But I do think rather than giving money to God to get God to give money to you, I think that's a little bit far-fetched. But what I'm talking about is to realize that God is on their side. The Lord's on your side. And if you will be faithful to him, he'll be on your side. And if you have a temptation, the Bible says in 1 Corinthians that he give you a way of escape. He will show you a way of escape. And all you got to do is look for that way of escape if you have a temptation. If you have a trial, God's got the victory for you. If you have a test, he's got the victory for you. And if you're faithful to him, he's going to be faithful to you, and these trials and tests and things that come your way will work out. I don't say that you won't ever have them, but I say they will work out. And it has happened in my life over and over and over again, and I know it will happen. If I could get folks to embrace that, that would be, I think, the mission God put me on.
What's the one practical thing Christians could do to improve the world?
I think the most important thing they could do, there's actually two things. First of all, live your Christian life. Don't try to live a worldly life and put in the Christian as an aside. Be a Christian and do what you need to do in the world to get your living and so forth, you know. Live your life. And I think that's the most important thing we can do. I'm not talking about being an old fogey or running around, running people down all the time because they're not saved or anything like that. Living your life and loving people is important. Loving them enough to live your life in front of them, but not to condemn them, but to love them.
What has been the biggest challenge to your faith?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I never looked at things as challenges. I've had times whenever I was in need of finances back when I was traveling as an evangelist, and I've had miracles happen where I just got on my knees and prayed, and God sent the money that I needed. And I saw that happen with my dad when he was a pastor. We had a situation where at one time we had absolutely no food in the house. We didn't even have a piece of bread in the house. And at that point, we were not in the house. We were living in a one-car garage attached to the building that my dad was starting the church in. My dad got down beside his and mom's bed and prayed. I saw him do it. And it was obvious to me what he was doing. He got down there and prayed out loud, "Lord, send us some food." And it wasn't an hour from that time that two ladies knocked on the door and said, "The Lord told us to bring you some food." And we had two bags of groceries. That's not a challenge. I was talking about challenges, but that's a victory. Now, if I have a challenge now, I can look at that victory and I can say, "Well, Lord, you've already given me the victory." So challenge is, you know, it can't compare.
So what is your favorite verse?
It's Psalm 118:6, and that's, "The Lord is on my side. I will not fear what can man do unto me."
Aside from the Bible, what book would you recommend to new Christians?
One of the books that really blessed me a lot was a book called Destined for the Throne by a pastor, I think it's a Baptist pastor named Bill Hammer. I've read other books, but then this book really influenced me a lot. I read it back when I was young in the ministry, and it really kind of set my spirit on fire. It's called Destined for the Throne by Paul Bill Hammer.
So my last question is, what do you think heaven's like?
Well, I think it's described in the book of Revelation, what heaven will be like very well, you know, with all the walls of jasper and the gates of pearl and the streets of pure gold. By the way, the streets are pure gold. They're not paved with gold. I've heard people write songs about the streets are paved with gold, and they're not. They're pure gold. And it's so pure that it's not like the gold that we see here on earth. It's different. I think that's what the New Jerusalem is going to be like, and we'll be a part of that. That's what we generally think about heaven, and that's the New Jerusalem, which is the eventual where we're going to be. Before that, in my belief system, before that, you got to have the rapture of the church, and tribulation, then the second coming, and then the 1,000-year millennial reign, and then you're going to see all this other.
But I like to look ahead.
Yeah, that's going to be the final destination, or the final thing that happens.
I want to thank Bill Bays for joining me. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and it's nice to talk with you.
Amazing and so glorious, so beautifully victorious, almost unbelievable, completely inconceivable, astoundingly divine, wonderfully sublime, incredibly, delightfully, stupendously, abundantly, emphatically, eternally, fantastically, remarkably, good news!
We've got good news for people in trouble, good news for people in pain, we've got good news for everybody, good news. Jesus is alive. Good news, Jesus is alive. Good news, Jesus is alive. Alive, alive, alive. Good news, Jesus is alive.